connecting Fremont County through conversations. This is the County 10 Podcast from the Porter's 10Cast Studio. Here's your host, Bethany Baldus.
Hello, Riverton and Fremont County. This is Bethany Baldus with the Local Ladies Podcast in the 10Cast Porter's Studio. Today, we have a full house. I have Jack Schmidt here, Tyler McCann, and Angela McCann. How are you guys today?
We're great.
Very good. Thank you.
Angela. Good. So, Tyler, you've kind of become a little bit of a, I think you're a celebrity in our community.
What?
With all the work you've been doing in the, with the Rendezvous City Beef Roundup and just how you're pushing the envelope on beef production and bringing that back to our area.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was celebrity status.
Don't you think so?
Well, he's certainly, okay.
I think Jack is a celebrity.
Jack is a celebrity.
That's celebrity status.
You're right. So we have the room full here.
There's lots of definitions for celebrity, and I hit a few of them. You know, mostly that my name's in the paper a lot.
Well, hopefully in the good columns.
Well, yeah. Sometimes. But I would say this about Tyler. He is the exception to the agriculture producer, the normal agriculture producer, because he is able to market. He not only produces, but he has gone that extra mile to where he's marketing his own product. And in this day and age, that has to happen. That's what we're seeing happen in agriculture now. And that's probably what we ought to talk about today, is how people can gain more of that consumer dollar by doing exactly what Tyler's doing and helping other people do it, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a pretty steep learning curve, that's for sure. But it's interesting how much this thing is building. You know, I feel like we're kind of behind the curve. This idea of doing the beef roundup, though, I think it's amazing. And then I unfortunately can't say that it was an original idea. I stood around the one day at the Coffee Roasters Festival, and after Jack roasted some coffee in the skillet, I thought, why are we not doing this with beef? If we're not doing this with beef, we're crazy.
That's exactly right. Exactly right.
So tell us kind of what the concept behind the Beef Roundup is going to be. And it's on August 28th or
29th. Yeah. So we want it, you know, everybody always says that and especially these customers that buy the different people and smaller producers and stuff that are finishing their own beef, they say, this guy has the best beef. And the more we stood around, we thought, you know, how much of a boost to these people's business would that be if they could actually say, we have the best beef? And so there's still so many ideas swirling around with how we're going to not only do that, but then how that can go as we move forward in the next year and hopefully years and years to come. But it goes back to what Jack said about the marketing. It is tough because as we were starting to build this business and we were seeing, people said, well, I didn't know those people finished beef, or I didn't know you finished beef. And so pretty soon we were going, there's got to be some way, some kind of a pinnacle of an event that we can get consumers and producers together. And I'm still shocked with, well, I didn't know my neighbor finished beef. And so that's kind of the idea, is that we still get people, even right here in Riverton, as close as we are to agriculture, that say, you know, they'll buy a half or a whole beef, and they'll say, well, can you make it all in ribeyes? Yeah, I'll work on that.
And that's exactly right. That's a real good point. We have moved so far away from production that most people don't really know how this chain works.
You mean the whole pig isn't bacon?
Well, it could be. If you'd like it, we could make it that way. Your money will do anything. But what has happened in my lifetime, I have seen this thing go from diversified farms that were basically self-sufficient And they fed themselves and their neighbors in concentric circles. And just the bigger the farm they were, the more neighbors they fed, to where they got specialized and they got bigger. And they went with, if they had cattle, hogs, and sheep, they might go with cattle and hogs. And then they dropped the hogs and just go with the cattle and specialized until now we have these huge conglomerates. And we can debate that on the system that we got. I don't know what's right and what's wrong. But I do know that when you get too concentrated at the top, the supply and demand formula does not work. You got to have a level playing field of a lot of buyers and a lot of sellers, which that's what we're trying to do here. We've got a lot of producers, and that's what Todd is saying. We've got a lot more producers than we thought we had, yep. And we've got a heck of a lot of consumers,
yes.
And they want to buy. So that's the purpose of this, is to get that consumer and that producer together.
Well, and one of the interesting things that really drew me to your guys' Facebook page and I started following you was the conversation of having almost a subscription. Because yeah. We don't necessarily have room for a half or a quarter.
Right.
And so that idea of being able to get a smaller amount but still be able to buy local and that kind of stuff
involved,
I think is attractive.
Yeah.
Yeah, as well.
We were shocked with how many people, you know, when we looked at it as a bit for our own business, Cowboy Cuts, there were so many people that came to us, whether they were empty nesters or smaller families or however, whatever that was, that they said, we want to buy local and we want to support you guys because you're our friends and you're our neighbor, but we can't buy, we couldn't even do a half or a quarter, you know, we wouldn't use that much in a year or... we beef like this.
Right.
And so then the more we started looking into it, how much of a business benefit it is to us to be able to start predicting the amount of beef rather than having this huge swing in supply and demand and kind of this boom and bust system. And we've seen the effects of that just this spring.
Mm-hmm.
So that we're still working some of the kinks out on how to do everything from a budget type box. We have one lady, I think she has 6 kids. They order a ton of beef every month, beef and lamb.
Literally a ton?
I think their order is like 100 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's great. And that's like every 5 or 6 weeks. But they're more of the budget cuts, a lot of ground meat, some of the bigger roasts and stuff. And then we have all the way up to some real good friends of ours, that Angela grew up with, they want 2 ribeyes, 2 New York strips, and 2 pounds of hamburger. So it's cool. We're learning how to tailor that to the business that we have here in Riverton.
Well, and then that eventually does equal whole cow, so that
sure.
You're not just
sure.
Wasting and having,
yep.
Like you have all of the cuts out.
Yep,
where they need
and
to
then
be.
You have something fresh from,
yep.
You know, whether that's month to month or every 60 days or however that works. So we still have some kinks to work out, but it's really a cool option for us to be able to go in and know within just a couple ahead every year what we're going to be able to supply locally. And that was one of the coolest things. This spring, when we had people call us in beginning of April, older couples, that we had one that they were in tears when we pulled up to their house. Their son contacted us. He doesn't live close to them. They were afraid to go to the grocery store, and they had run out of groceries. And that was the coolest thing, that somebody got a hold of us through Facebook, doesn't live close, and ordered their family some meat. And we said, you know, we can take some other things out of our own pantry and stuff. They were in tears when we showed up. It took forever to find them because their street sign had blown down. But it was one of the coolest things to feed your neighbors. And when these people are just, they were so thankful. It was amazing. It was really cool.
Which, we'll just go there now if you want to. That's what Wyoming is really famous for. Is that freedom, that Food Freedom Act.
Yeah.
We are the only state in the United States that between the producer and the consumer, there is no regulation at all.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't apply to red meat yet. It's almost ready to. We're trying to work on that. But
or
that
dairy,
just,
right?
Or dairy, correct. Right. Well, you can't sell raw milk. So
oh,
raw milk,
yes. Okay.
So I want to bring up an illustration of that, of how we have to comply with a lot of onerous food safety rules, you're having to go to Cody, Wyoming right now, right, to get your meat processed.
Yep.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I think people need to, we need to talk about that. We need to understand that. Wyoming, the cattle, the good Lord gave us a great product to sell. This is not poison. There's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah.
We do not need inspection. Where we need inspection is if you're killing 3,000 head a day, but with 6,000 people doing it, and you have no idea who's adulterating what.
Yeah.
Between that producer and that consumer, Bruce Westlake has turned out to be a really good friend, and I know he's a mentor to you.
Yeah.
We were talking a couple days ago. His father built that little mm-hmm. packing plant out there at Kinnear about
7 years ago.
Yeah, we're about the same age. He and I at the packing plant are about the same age.
Okay.
So you figure 20 head a week for 70 years, that kind of number of critters, you know, there's literally thousands of head have gone through that plant with no inspection. And nobody has ever got sick.
Right.
You know, so why have we got inspection?
And if they did get sick,
then you knew exactly where to go. Exactly. Yep. Exactly. So we need to think about that as this thing progresses. We want this thing to be safe, of course. But that cost of that inspection and that bureaucracy is overwhelming.
Yeah, and that's been another big learning curve is all the USDA stuff. You know, we were just doing deliveries to one of the restaurants on our way here, and learning all of the final user and all of these different things that they have. But yeah, it was it's been quite a process, and that it's interesting to see it now, this pendulum swinging back the other way with all our food freedom. It's pretty cool. And like I say, in getting this deal ready, talking to people from other states and other counties around Wyoming, and they go, wow, this group that you guys have in Fremont County is really leading the way. It's so cool.
So this year's event will be based just on Wyoming producers, correct?
Yes.
So like say in the future, if other states come here, how is that going to work, like, cross state lines and legislation? And will they have to, like, I'm just curious how that'll look.
Right now, the way things are today, and Jack, correct me if I'm wrong, that's all going to have to be federally inspected,
yeah.
USDA, for right now. I know there's some talk about getting reciprocity between mm-hmm. the states with the state inspection level to where, like, Jared and Hudson would be able now if we have reciprocity with Utah, you know, but as for right now, that's just going to have to all be federally inspected.
Which is also one of the reasons why it's not open to other states at this point, because we don't have the interstate commerce thing figured out yet.
But I predict with all this activity that's going on, that's going to change, because the people demanding something is what makes change, and people are demanding to be able to buy their beef from the producer they want to. And that's and right here, it's, you know, it's your neighbor. But what if you live on the line and you want to go across the state line?
Yep.
What difference does it make? There's no difference in Wyoming and Nebraska when you get, well, there's a little bit. To follow me, that product's the same. And so that is a huge, huge part of this, is getting those regulations changed to where they comply more to satisfy this market and help that producer.
Essentially, that's what the country was built on. Why we're states. I mean, it comes back to the 10th Amendment and being individual states and being able to have interstate commerce and all of that stuff. I don't know. It's like someone came up with this already.
We just got away.
Weird.
We got away from it, didn't we?
Yeah. So I have a question for you guys. Just because this is something that's always, and Angela, you get to pipe in on this one. You don't get to be quiet the whole time. but what is the difference between farming and ranching?
I'll let Angela start off on that one. She's got a pretty good one loaded and ready.
Ranchers raise animals and farmers grow crops.
There you go.
That's pretty simple.
I always thought a farmer had a cap and a rancher had a hat, but I never did know.
Well, I grew up near Jeffrey City. And oh, the wind you blew couldn't all wear a hat. Time, so I always wore a baseball cap.
I just thought you roped all the time.
I walk with a lean.
When the wind's.
But really, and that's what makes this agriculture not only interesting, but viable, is we've got everything. And a lot of ranchers do a lot of farming, a lot of ranching, you know, especially in this country. It's amazing how much productive land there is around here, isn't there?
I heard a good one the other day. An older guy and I were talking at one of the cattle producers' meetings, and he said that Wyoming was meant to be grazed and not raised. And I think that was pretty profound with, you know, there's so much in, like when you get out to the ranch, and you've been out there, I've passed you going out with your horses one day. That country out there, and my father-in-law says it all the time, because there was a guy that bought the ranch that he was raised on, that Angela was born on, and he tried to put in some farming. He tried to put in some irrigation. And the soil was so alkaline, nothing would grow. And they tried to explain to him, you know, if this was good farm ground, there'd have been a farmer out here long before you came along. And so there, we do have that neat division here just by our soil types and our and what we can grow. We've got some fantastic farm ground just right over the hill here. And then we've got some outstanding ranch land. There's never going to be a housing development out there, so we're good. We can keep ranching.
Which is
going to
be
time.
One of the big benefits of the beef roundup is people will be able to come and sample grass finished beef, grain finished beef.
Yeah.
You know, and make up your own mind what you like. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of difference in people, a lot of difference in critters. And you are what you eat, and you are what they are what they eat. And it makes a difference in the way they're. And if you're interested in that, this is a perfect opportunity to come in and try, see what you like.
So where do people go to get more information about the event or get tickets?
So CWC has been huge with making this all happen. And so they have got it up on their website, on their Facebook. We're trying to share it like weekly on, what is that, U.S. Food and Produce? I need to pull it up on Facebook, but there's several Facebook pages that are carrying that. I know we're going to do some more things with the radio in the next couple weeks, but yeah, mainly just go to CWC and check out. They got it on their events page, and they got it on their website, and like I said, we've already heard of tickets being sold in Nebraska. We had a couple talk to us from Virginia about coming. So get your tickets soon.
Yeah.
And, of course, tickets at the door.
I believe we'll still have general admission at the door.
And I think it's important for people to know that there's going to be people there to help you learn how to cook this.
Yeah.
Because I want you to know you don't have to eat ribeyes and New York strips to have good beef.
Yeah.
There are really interesting and great dishes you can make with the lower end cuts that are more economy, so you can purchase it and sustain your family very well.
Yeah, we had a couple come out and eat with us. They were from Arizona the other day, and we've been trying all these different cuts with our butcher to see what does and doesn't sell, and so we have all this different stuff in our freezer, and in all three of our freezers. And we had some round steaks, and she said, well, what are we going to do? I said, let's do kebabs, you know, let's try that with the round steaks. And so we're feeding our guests, and wow, this is really good. And pretty soon we said, well, yeah, these are some of our round steaks. This is round steak. So yeah, you can buy some of those less expensive cuts, but yeah, it's, with Amy
Madeira is coming over from Jackson. Yeah. She's the head of the culinary department for CWC.
Yeah.
And bringing two assistants with her. So there'll be a lot of,
cooking going on.
You betcha.
Yeah. So
that's fantastic. I'm excited for it. I can't wait.
And then other speakers will be,
Val Murray.
Yes.
She is the lady in Powell, I think, or somewhere around Powell. She exported a lot of beef to Pacific Rim, yeah, Taiwan.
Oh, okay.
She's going to come down, and she's going to talk about there are two things. One, some of that exporting and her experience with that and where that's going, because the people there are just crazy for Wyoming beef. And she's wanting to set up some partnerships with restaurants and grocery stores there and see how that works. So she's going to talk about that and this, a technology that she's using, beef chain technology, and what her experience is with that. And then Les Barkhurst, he's the, I love it, it's iCow, the Independent Cattleman of Wyoming. He's going to come and he's going to talk about the sustainability of grazing in Wyoming. That's such a big thing that we always hear now with every product is sustainability. And just like that old guy was telling me, you know, Wyoming was meant to be grazed. And so there are a lot of environmental benefits. And sometimes the producers get a bad name on that. And so Les is going to kind of help us with and how that economic impact comes back with what we're doing and like keeping those dollars in the state or even in the county. And then Tyler Lindholm, he's coming to talk. And I've been calling it the Herd Shares Act. Is it the Prime Act?
No, that's something different. It is the Herd Shares. HBL 150.
Yeah.
We looked it up one time. I think that's right.
Anyway.
We talk about it constantly.
We do.
He's coming to talk about what that, because I get questions about it all the time. I get other producers asking me questions. I get consumers. So, like, how do we, can we go and buy the back half of this cow now?
So the basic premise of that is people, and we were just talking about it, when you buy off a producer, it's off, you can't buy the cut. You know, usually you can't buy less than a quarter.
Right.
And in fact, in a custom exempt processing plant, you're not supposed to sell less than a quarter. You're not supposed to cut it more than into four ways. But a lot of people can't afford, do not want, or can't store that quarter. So the herd share will do is you will have a contract with that producer, and you'll own a piece of that entire herd.
Yep.
So when that animal goes into the custom exempt slaughterhouse, then you can buy 1 pound of hamburger if you want to, because that's legally part of your herd.
Right.
That's the concept there.
Yeah, so, and so he's going to expand all of that and tell how it's going to affect.
Potential.
Yeah, it's see how it'll affect producers and consumers to where you can come. We haven't even really looked into how it's going to affect our business yet.
Right,
We've been so busy doing everything else. But, yeah.
So your guys' subscription thing is not based off of that, then? No. It's based off of a different...
It's expected to be.
Now, because of we only sell custom wholes and halves, and so we've been able to use Riverton Pack for that. We were using... what's the place in Glen Rock? Country Meat. Country Style. We were using them. So we could do that if you come and buy a hole and a half. And we still are going to keep that part of our business going, because there are some people that still like having that in the freezer. But, yeah, on our subscriptions right now, because of what we're doing with going into the restaurants and stuff, and we've looked into shipping, but there's still some hurdles there. And so with everything that happened this spring, we're wanting to concentrate on local first. So we're sticking with the USDA processor in Cody, and then until we get our processor here in Riverton, and we're gonna get the first steer to go through that when it's got the final inspection, and we're gonna show how that beef is gonna go and be distributed around the county, and also we're gonna try and ship some of that, but. Yeah,
all from the same.
Yep.
That'll be awesome.
So we're going to, you know, we don't know when exactly that's going to be, but we're going to be ready.
Do you have any updates on?
It's still, latest is still this year.
Yeah.
We blood on the floor in 2020.
Yeah. So we're looking forward to that, to where we can have the. Yeah, Angela, we talk to them weekly, and that's always the first question. Yeah, anymore, I don't even ask.
And they get really tired of that question.
Yeah, anymore, he says, I don't know, when he picks up the phone, and then we talk about whatever.
I'll tell you what, it is a job for the faint of heart to start a processing plant. Yeah. It's number one. It's six figures, and the first figure ain't one.
Yeah.
You know, it's
yeah,
exactly. a lot of money
right.
to yeah. get it done. And back to that regulation, the estimate I heard is it adds 30% to the cost of that thing
yep.
to get that USDA stamp. Yep. Plus all the stuff you got to do, yep. and then you got to put up with the people. I don't know if I had to have the patience.
Like you?
Yeah, like me, exactly.
Yeah, so right now we use our USDA inspected. You know, unless you come to us and buy a whole or a half, everything that you get in one of these subscription boxes is going to be USDA inspected.
Cool. So, and that was the stamp you posted on Facebook
yeah,
a few weeks
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, it was really exciting. And I don't know, it was really cool to me because we've been doing this for a while. We wanted to make sure that we had it right. And to see our name, you know, this thing that we started, what's it been a little over a year and a half ago now, right next to that USDA stamp. Man, it was cool.
Yep,
it was so cool.
I thought that was one of the happiest posts we saw that week.
It was one of the biggest posts, too. Yep. It was crazy. I think like 2,800 people saw that.
Yeah.
And it was just one of the labels that they stuck on a piece of paper and said, you know, it was the one that I was supposed to edit and make sure everything's right.
And just to clarify that, there's three levels of inspection. There's the custom exempt. There's the state inspection, and then there's USDA. If you had state inspection, you can sell that meat anywhere inside the state. Mm-hmm. If you want to go out across that state line, if you want to go to Nebraska or wherever, it's got to be USDA. Yeah. There were only four slaughter facilities in the state of Wyoming up until this week. There are now five.
Yay.
Yeah. I saw that.
The Star Valley Meat Block. Been over in Thane.
Yeah.
They had, and I wanted this one, I'm doing this for my wife. They had a all-woman processing crew.
Yep.
And the inspector said it's the first one he'd ever seen. And I want to bring that up because our new CWC's new meat processing instructor starts next week. And her name is Carla Shields.
Yeah.
Kaylee Shields.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to have a woman, you know, Wyoming is the equality state, right? By golly, they'll have blood on their hands too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is so cool.
That is really awesome. Yeah. You know everything, Jack.
Well, if I don't, I'll make it up.
All right. Very cool. So then what restaurants can people go to and get your guys's?
So, Brown Sugar, mm-hmm. She's got a couple of our different cuts on the menu all the time now. We're able to keep up. We're still pretty small in our production. She does specials of ours as well. I think we just dropped off some meat there on the way over here today. And then I dropped off some with Jake at Roasted Bean.
Awesome.
These are like 35-day dry-aged ribeyes. I just saw somebody else advertise some 40-day dry-aged for like $40 a pound. Yeah. So these are going to be like $50 steaks. They won't be because we got it done at normal price. But, Jake at Roasted Bean, he was the first one that ever did a special for us when we started this because he and my wife grew up as neighbors. Oh. I think they even went on a date once, didn't they?
Don't remember.
He's not very memorable.
Yeah, but Jake was the first one.
Hello, Jake.
They did their special, and it was so cool. He said to me beforehand, he said, you know, I just don't see it in Riverton, Wyoming, man. I'm telling you, with what we're looking at with prices, I don't know. We're going to try it. He told me the next day, he said, that's the highest price special I've ever run in my restaurant, and that's the most steaks I've ever sold in one night. It was so cool.
I bet it was amazing, too.
It was. It was awesome.
It was
and
so good.
People local, will pay for quality.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that.
Local and quality is huge. Yeah. So, Brown Sugar, Roasted Bean and Cuisine. And we're doing some stuff with Bunk's Barbecue.
Awesome.
Yeah. So James
they
is
have
awesome.
The new restaurant opening yep. at the end of September.
Is that what I'm
getting? Yep.
So I think
and boy, does I've he been, do a good job.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, it was neat. So we went to the Brown Company Customer Appreciation Day, and when was that? Earlier this spring, summer, and
pre or post COVID.
It was pre, yeah, it was pre, that's
how
right.
We should talk,
yeah, right.
Pre and post.
It was pre-COVID, so, and he had saved all of the briskets that I had been selling him all throughout the winter and all spring, and he served all local meat at the customer appreciation. It was so cool.
Oh, cool.
It was really amazing, and people loved it. So yeah, James has been really cool, and he's wanting to do more stuff all the time, and he keeps telling me, like, get the restaurant open. We're going to try that idea.
Well, and at Fair, Gary, the burritos,
yeah.
Gary, he did, Bunks and Gary got together and did a mashup, which was phenomenal. So I just think this is so cool. If yeah. we can become the food capital of
yes.
Wyoming.
Yes.
And, you know, one of the things that I think that Wyoming struggles with is we focus so much on our borders and the outside of the square. And so if we can bring food into the center, that's going to yeah. bring people looking here.
It's right. really cool because we did an event last fall or last summer, and we had some people. And one of my hobbies is charcuterie. And one of these guys, that like dry-aged yep. meats different sausages and different, yeah. she loves it when I have stuff hanging all over our house and in the refrigerator. She'll go, what is in this bowl? Is it going bad? No, it's about ready. It's almost right. So she puts up with me very well. We're kind of out here on an island. And it's interesting to see how that mentality has evolved. And so anyway, we're serving these different people as they come. And one of the guys said, you know, I lived in Europe for a while, and charcuterie is a huge deal in Europe. And he said, this is some of the best charcuterie I've ever had. Mm. And that just blew me away, because here it's just our little homemade recipe, and we tried the things that we liked. And to get a compliment like that, it's really interesting to see how food has evolved here on the island.
Right, really. Right, yep.
And that's what Brad talks about a lot, that we're in this tourist corridor right here, mm-hmm. and the number of people that go right, you know, down right through Main Street on their way to Yellowstone, yeah. you know, are potential customers for all this beef, and they want it.
Yeah.
And he talks about the concept of beefing up Main Street.
Yeah.
So get a charcuterie store up there. Get
yep.
all these little shops where people can stop and buy our local product.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we're on the cusp of something really big. So I'm real proud of you kids for working at this. Yeah.
I am so excited about all of this. I like food. I like healthy food. I want to be able to buy local food. Like, you know, I always think how, and I think we've talked about this on the podcast before, but this idea of these big box stores has not been around forever. It's about World War II concept, when people start going to work. And I think that we've really lost focus on our supply chain. And I feel like right now we're in this perfect storm of realizing where our food comes from, mm-hmm. and wanting that local food and being able to have that available again.
Yeah. Yeah, like I say, this spring, it was just amazing to see how grateful people were. The first day that Smith's ran out of beef,
mm-hmm.
my phone never quit ringing.
It's terrifying, and I think it's going to hit again this winter.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not trying to be a conspiracy theorist.
I would say the likelihood of empty shelves is very, very good.
And I'm concerned about the price in the market. If it doesn't go to where they completely run out, what the price is, because you look at this deal, this flood in China, and what that's going to do to their corn and where our corn, you know, all of these different factors that are playing out around the world
right
now.
We're in a world market, aren't we?
It's interesting to see where that may lead and how it may really power this local thing again.
Don't you think we're really going to have a two-tiered market when this thing shakes out?
Yeah.
We're going to have people. There's still going to be people, God love them, that go to Walmart, no matter what.
Right.
You know, and that's fine.
They're God's children. I just want Walmart to be able to buy our local beef.
Well, maybe that'll happen. But, you know, there's to start right now, there's going to be the people that are Tyler's customers now. And they're going to know they have to pay a little bit more to get it done. And that's going to encourage more people to be producers. And that's where that supply and demand falls in. And when it all shakes out, we're going to have a wonderful food economy where everybody can afford to eat. And the producer is rewarded for the labors that they provide.
Well, and it's not so far away from them that they basically had to give their...
We don't have to send it to Arkansas.
Yep, yeah. Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
Exactly. Take all those
labels. The money to Arkansas. Yes, yeah. Right.
There's something interesting that happens when somebody comes out and they watch our little girls feed a bucket of grain to our steers. You can't buy beef anywhere else after that. I don't know if that's something in their psyche.
You can see his promotional.
I was going to say, I want to take my little girls out there and let them feed.
Dude.
It wouldn't come. Yeah. Wouldn't do that. How about if I threw the feed out? Would that help any? No. Probably not.
The kids are cuter, Jack. Sorry. And I think that Jack and I've talked a lot about that is bringing it back to local and having the kids involved and just like the eggs, being able to buy local eggs again, and just all these little things create this.
It's interesting. You go ahead.
No, but it's all about quality. How many people have come to our place and can you ship this? Yep. Can we get this? We can't get this in Virginia. We can't get this in California.
Florida.
We can't get this in Arizona.
Exactly.
And the taste. But blind taste tests, kids tell the truth.
Yeah.
They tell the truth. When we have to buy eggs a store. Oh. Our kids don't eat them. Yeah. I don't tell them what egg I'm cooking, but they don't eat them.
Right.
When we're getting eggs from our local producer, my mother,
thanks, Mom.
They eat them. They eat them. Yeah. They eat all of it. No leftovers, no nothing. They eat Tyler's beef jerky. They ask for it as a snack instead of jelly beans or fruit snacks or whatever
chips.
We may have.
So that's one of the big advantages to going back to this local thing is the health. Yep. You know, the cost might be higher, but you're going to be healthier doing this way. The figure I read just the other night was 2/3 of the people in the United States are either diabetic or pre-diabetic. There you go. So that's what we learned when we started the restaurant, the local restaurant. And we use your beef. We use a lot of people's beef.
Yeah.
But people made so many comments, this is a lot better than what I get at the store. You know, it makes a huge difference in flavor if you don't travel. You feel better. You know how you feel when you travel 500 miles. Your food feels the same way.
I'm so excited about your people. I think it would be interesting to do one of the blind taste tests at the Beef Roundup. Like if you're going to have all that food they're already cooked, like because if you're already planning it, that would be.
We may have a surprise.
That would be a lot of fun. I always think of my husband, who is so not scared. He's just cautious. And I think that it would be a lot of fun. Like eggs, even would be a good one.
So you mean you have a sirloin and you have a chuck steak and you have a
piece of tongue? No. Not so like that.
A piece from Smith's and a piece from somebody local.
Local compared to.
But now everybody's taste buds are different. I agree. You know, that's
it takes away the idea of where it came from, think sometimes when we've just bought from the store, and I know that we fall into this category, when you've just bought from the store for your entire life, you think there's something different there. Mm-hmm. Where even if they taste the same to you, you think there's something there that's not.
Yeah.
Takes away the stigma.
Yeah.
But Tyler's referred to it before, and I don't know if you guys have heard this. It's like wine.
It is.
Nice, dark, sharp wine, and some people prefer a nice sweet wine.
Yeah.
It's the same with the taste of beef.
It is.
Yep.
We need to market our beef like we market our wine.
Yeah.
Hey, they're on to something.
The term in the wine industry is the noir.
Yeah.
That everybody's got the noir, the taste of the land.
Yeah.
And so let's sell that taste of our land.
Yeah, and that was how we, you said that to me that one day, the first day I met you, we were standing out. I was standing there. Well, you thought I was an idiot too. And here we're both idiots together. So I was standing there.
That makes us the smart ones, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
We always knew that.
Yeah. I was standing there cutting meat, and Jack comes in through the door, and the more we get talking, and he says Tarar, because we were trying to think, how do we compete in a commodity market? And that's what beef has been turned into, is a commodity market. And so, you know, how do you set yourself apart without? We wanted to sell something that we liked the flavor of. And there's already a lot of grass-fed, there's already a lot of Wagyu, there's all of these, the Kobe, and those are all, and they have their places in the market. But how did we look at what we had? We have 500 head of mother cows, and then not completely have a wholesale change in our business model, and how do we put out a product that we like? Well, and I always tell people this when you come out to the house, and you show them the mountains, and you go, this is what makes the beef great.
Yep. This is our flavor.
Yep. Yeah, we have a flavor in Fremont County that there isn't anywhere else in the world. And I'm not a huge fan of grass-fed and grass-finished, and that's why we put a little corn, oats, and barley in them, but they're never in a feedlot. They're always out in little pastures that we can't hay for one reason or another, and they're always out moving. And so that was kind of how we came up with that idea of, we've got to sell this as a specific taste, because no one now can, if we say we're bigger, stronger, faster, somebody from Nebraska that can grow 10 times more corn than us can go, no, we're bigger, stronger, faster. And we see that going on all the time. So, you know, that terroir factor is what's going to set us apart. And now, so we had a guy come to us the other day with some grass-fed beef. He also one of the people that Angela grew up with. So this is a partnership, like, I won't say how many years in the making. But he said, you got to try this and be honest with me, because I think I got something good. And he's up on Sweetwater, and it was outrageous. And so we're going to partner with them, and we're going to start offering different flavors within the same label. And I've already talked to Amanda about serving a flight of beef.
Yes. Oh my goodness. Now how much fun.
Can you imagine in the next decade how the marketing possibilities of this? You know, there's wine clubs all over the world. We'll have a beef club.
Yeah.
You ship them a different kind of beef every
week. We'll ship them some Ingles 1 week, and we'll ship them some Lost Wells 1 week, and some Cowboy Cut. How cool is that?
And by the way, we're going to have an individual there at the roundup that we'll have. I hope he has them. He's been feeding aged cows.
Yeah.
And then ages them.
Yep.
He calls it double aging. And they say that beef is fantastic.
Really?
And so when you're foraging, and I'm old enough to remember this, when you forage fed cattle, and back when I was a kid, especially when Dad was, that's all you did. You fed the corn to the hogs, you know, because they'd make money. The cows didn't make much money, so you left them there on cat. So we didn't kill till they were 4 or 5 years old, is when those grass feds were slaughtered, because it takes age, it takes time to convert that cellulose into fat. And so I love that prospect, and I'm very anxious to try that beef.
Yeah.
Well, and that's such an exciting concept too, because it gives all of the beef an opportunity too, because he'll take, instead of it just being like a wasteful kind of
grind up and throw on a bun.
Yeah,
but it's exciting for the producers too.
Yep.
Because I grew up on a ranch. You just culled your older cows and you sold them at the sale barn for nothing. Whatever.
Exactly.
You get.
Yeah.
And this gives us an opportunity
to have profit.
To have a little profit, because we've probably run them a couple years and they haven't had calves.
That's
and that's how the first year
you always give them another chance. Yeah. Oh, she'll breed this.
Yep. Right. And that's how we started. You know, we had a calf that was an accident. And he was born in a snowstorm, and he lost his ears, his ears, nose, and tail, and one toe, I think. And he was 1,600 pounds.
He was probably the most spoiled cow.
He really was. He was like 1,600 pounds if he was 1 pound. He was huge by the time he got finished. And that's kind of our focus for our business. Is there'll always be a commercial business. And so we're not going to get completely out of that. But to be able to reclaim some of those, if he'd have gone through the sale barn, we'd owed them money to sell him for us. You know, we still have Hereford Bulls. And so now with the popularity of Angus, these calves that look like Hereford calves don't bring as much at the sale. So if we can start to reclaim a few of those dollars, and like Angela's saying, with these older cows, there is a lot of profit margin in there that if we can start claiming that back, you know, some of these ranches are going to start to be, I know a lot of these guys that they're just one bad year away from going out of business.
Plus a lot of these ranches have, they have maximized what they can turn their, to use, use of their resources.
Yep.
You know, they've done, they're doing as good a job with what they've got.
They're so efficient.
Exactly. So they got no more room there. Now we're offering not only a place to process, more places to process locally, but then market locally. And so they recoup all that money. And
so they get to keep their cows here instead of just selling babies.
And their kids here. Yeah. Maybe the kids get to stay on the ranch.
That's a huge thing for us. You know, we looked at it. You put a semi-load of these calves together and you send them off to the sale, or they've already been sold on the video or however that goes. You lose a nickel on a semi-load of calves, that's a big chunk of money. You're $20,000, $30,000 in just like that. And so we're very fortunate that we're all able to work on the ranch, just because we've been at it a while and her family has done such a good job getting it to that point. But you send a few of those semis off full of those calves and they all lose $20,000 or $30,000, and pretty soon everybody's got to go get a job.
And you're exactly right. The whole industry is that close to going under.
I know a lot of family ranches that are just one bad year away from going under. And so we're very fortunate, you know, and that's, and Angela is really, she's the unsung hero of the beef roundup.
I can't tell.
She really is, because literally every phone call that I've had to be on and every meeting that we've had to go to, she's got to keep the cows going. She's got to keep the kids going. She's got to do it. So she is literally, if you can only thank one person for making the beef roundup happen, thank you, Angela.
So that's why at the beginning when we started this, I said the celebrity is you. Really, it's Angela.
It is.
The celebrity.
It is.
I take no credit.
Definitely.
I'd say that's true for Wyoming women.
Yeah.
Like, just a strong breed of women is what it is.
All together, yeah. Yeah.
But I'm excited because I grew up on the ranch. I left the ranch for a time and I came back to it. That this is going to help build something for our future.
Yes.
That's what I'm looking forward to. Is I'm all about the kids. Yeah. And how do we create a system to where they can inherit without debt? Because how many kids inherit their family's debt when they take over these family ranches because they did the best they could, but the market was never there?
And unfortunately now, when these big ranches sell, they sell to billionaires, that 1% or whatever you want to call them, people with money, and it's a plaything.
It's a hobby.
Yeah. And that's not how. That's
or
not
they
how.
Subdivide them and turn them into cement.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, keep that family ranch.
Yeah.
So I think I'm curious how people get your beef and how they contact you. Are you guys open for new customers?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Check us out on Facebook, Wyoming Cowboy Cuts. And our website right now, we've got everything kind of set, but we haven't pushed the last button to get where we have ordering on the website.
Maybe after the roundup.
Yeah. You know, that's been the biggest thing, is that we had all the market in the world this spring and none of the processing. So we've continued to double every year. And this year, we actually, right now, we have more cattle on feed than we thought we would sell all year, which is amazing. But, yeah, so we're the processing is what's limiting our capacity right now. So we're still staying fairly small for the rest of this year just because we want to be cautious, and so many of the processors got booked up. But yeah, WyomingCowboyCuts.com, Wyoming Cowboy Cuts on Facebook, and we have an 800 or 844 number now that they can call, so it goes to the right person's phone number. But yeah, we're keeping up with the demand right now, but just barely.
Yeah.
So we had a local lady, a local business contact us last night about getting them some beef. And so we'll work out some details with her today. But yeah, there's another business that we're getting into. So we're keeping up, but just barely.
So let me put in a little plug for CWC, because Tyler's exactly right. The bottleneck in this thing right now is processing.
Yep.
There's certainly the demand. There's certainly the supply. We don't have enough butchers. Yep. So CWC, Brad Tindall, saw this thing coming 3 years ago and started the wheels turning on a new ag center that will include a butcher curriculum. So if you want to learn to be a butcher, but not only a butcher, if you want to learn how to do the whole marketing thing, if you want to learn anything about beef processing, CWC is the place. Now, this we are ready to break ground on that this summer, and then the COVID.
Yeah. But the curriculum starts this year,
it
right?
It will start because we bought a mobile unit that we're going to be able to get started with, and that mobile unit will be on display at the Beef Roundup.
And that's another thing with the Beef Roundup is $7 of every ticket, whether it's general admission or VIP. When we started this idea, we wanted to have some sort of a cause that we were doing. $7 of every ticket is going into a scholarship program. So before we even have classes going for the meat sciences, there'll be a scholarship. And I don't know how all that's going to work, if that gets divided amongst a few kids or one kid or however that goes. But before the course even starts, there'll be a scholarship for us.
You keep going this hard, it might be the Tyler McCann Memorial Scholarship.
I might tip over at the end of the Beef Roundup.
All right, so don't forget about the Beef Roundup on August 29th.
Yeah.
I don't know why the 28th is in my head. The 29th. Yeah. And you can get tickets online.
Yeah, CWC events page has the tickets.
Or at the door.
Or at the door, yeah. I know.
Sure, we'll get you.
But it kind of sounds like you need to order.
Well, it's, yeah.
I think so, with the restrictions this year. It's, but yeah, and everybody that comes is going to get an insulated bag. And we've asked all the producers from all over the state to bring meat to sell.
Oh, so instead of a coffee cup, we get an insulated bag.
You get an insulated bag. The VIP tickets, they get a meat thermometer, because you're going to learn on the cooking side of it the safe handling processes. But yeah, so every ticket is going to get an insulated bag. And the VIPs get the meat thermometer, and you'll be able to go around. If you want to try a pound of hamburger from each of these different guys or ladies from around the state, it'll be cool. You'll be able to go home and have your own beef round up.
You betcha.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Oh, I'm so excited. Thank you, guys. I appreciate you coming in today.